Merry Christmas, everybody. Tim Priest with Tim O'Malley on Monday, December 23rd. We are talking the Camping World Bowl here today, a little bit of offensive play calling and decision-making among Reese Taylor and Quinn, and a little bit of analysis that we did earlier this week. I think we can start getting back to talking about Notre Dame versus Iowa State, whereas last week was a lot about Chip Long, but there's overlap there because it's certainly applicable to what Notre Dame's going to have to do against John Haycock. Haycock, a really good defensive coordinator for Iowa State. We'll get into all that, but I thought it was interesting from Saturday, Tim. Was that Saturday?
I'm getting my days mixed up now.
In terms of Brian Kelly talking about the collaborative offense and the communication, and it seemed to have everything to do with Chip Long not being there and a guy that probably didn't communicate really well. We know he didn't do a great job with that with the players along the way, and then certainly there's a little bit of friction as to some decision-making on the offensive side of the ball.
As soon as I heard it, I thought back to our podcast where I mentioned, look, if Chip Long didn't want Jeff Quinn, that's fine, because not a lot of people wanted Jeff Quinn. But once he's there, it is now your job.
Absolutely.
To be communicating with Jeff Quinn. And Brian Kelly is putting it out there that there was not enough communication. When he says the untrained eye isn't going to see what we have tweaked for this, that means no one is going to see it other than success or failure, because what the tweak is they have a clear line of communication now, which he believes will help them. And he mentioned early in the game, I found that interesting. It was obviously his choice of words was for a reason. I don't know what that reason is.
They frequently struggle out of the gate with the first drive.
He must be blaming some of that on the lack of game planning, collaborative game planning with Chip Long, Jeff Quinn. And I guess you throw Lance Taylor in there, but you know, that's... I don't really think of an offensive coordinator having to listen too much to the running backs coach about when they're going to run so I don't really think of that.
Yeah, no, no doubt. But look, you want harmony. You want harmony you can, like, if there's something you need to correct in practice, you can address it head on instead of getting ticked off about it because I don't like this coach and I don't like the way he's coaching his guys.
That's how I took the entire thing from Brian Kelly, and I don't think it has much to do with, we'll get into this later, but I don't think it has much to do with things we're going to see a different emphasis in the running game.
I think it might in some respects, but I mean, to the average eye, and we include ourselves in that, I'm not sure that we're going to see a difference. So we'll talk more about that in segment two with one of the questions, but as we got away from the whole Chip Long thing and got back more into Iowa State this week, I've done this every year. It's certainly not an exact science like most stories like this that I do are. It's not an exact science.
You would actually be the lead analyst for the New England Patriots, not even Notre Dame.
So exactly. But I think when you're analyzing opponent, and since you have a whole year's worth of games to analyze, and we narrowed it down to 10 games, we threw out Northern Iowa and Louisiana Monroe as it pertained to Iowa State, and then with Notre Dame Bowling Green in New Mexico. So we basically looked at 10 games, and you just analyze it. How well do you run the football against these opponents and what their average was offensively and defensively throughout the season? And clearly, and this was something we didn't need to do the stats for, but clearly we knew that the strength versus strength was going to be Iowa State's passing game versus Notre Dame's passing defense. And the way I break it down is wins, losses, and ties. And you just use a general yardage figure that if they exceed that yardage figure that opponent allowed on a regular basis, it's a win, loss, and tie within that middle range. And of those 10 games, Iowa State won its passing game aspect 8 times and tied twice, whereas Notre Dame's pass defense won 6 of those games, one being in W-O-N in quotes, 6 of those games won 1 loss and 3 ties. They throw it a ton, man. I mean, Brock Purdy threw for almost 4,000 yards. Notre Dame's pass defense has been outstanding for 2 years.
I feel like a tie for Notre Dame's pass defense in this game is a win.
I agree with that.
And then the thing is, you want to win against the rush defense has to then win, and then you win the game.
Yeah.
If you lose the rush defense, you never really have a great shot at winning it when you're Notre Dame football.
True, and we do have a question about that, and we'll address that. But in talking about that, Notre Dame's run defense had 6 wins, 3 losses, and 1 tie. Iowa State's rush offense had 2 wins, 4 losses, and 4 ties. So, I mean, generally speaking, you want to slow down, in most cases, certainly, you want to slow down the opposing team's running game. But in terms of what Notre Dame needs to do, they need to keep Breece Hall in check. You know that Brock Purdy's going to get his yards. He's got a good group of receivers. But when you're looking at the norm for Notre Dame is not giving up you know, they could get, quote, beaten in the passing game according to against the norm rules, and it would still only be around 200 yards passing.
I want to guess here. Is it Michigan, USC, and Louisville they lost to in the running game? Well, Michigan and USC.
I can double check.
Louisville's
my
guess. The other two are obvious, I think. But Michigan I bring up because they were overwhelmed at the point of attack, whereas USC, it sounds so weird to say this, but the plan was to allow them to run the football.
Well, clearly Michigan. Yeah, they gave up 303 yards rushing. Louisville was the other one.
Okay.
And USC.
That's a nice – if you look at it that way, it's can Iowa State overpower them at the point of attack?
They should not be able to, although I do like their offensive line. I think their offensive line is a very cohesive group.
Yeah. I don't want to throw out Louisville. I know Notre Dame's come so far, but it is a different feel. It's you don't know exactly what you're going to get because of the time to prepare.
No doubt. Scott Satterfield, a completely different approach.
USC, we have a question on that. That's a valid question. Is it going to be that situation again where
– I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I don't think we're looking at an air raid offense.
Right. And they don't have the talent.
I like their receivers. I like their tight end a lot. They actually have two. USC, I think we can safely say USC out-recruited Iowa State at receiver.
Well, at least in years past.
I'm not sure that's necessarily true right now because USC is struggling so badly. And then I guess the last thing I'd like to mention is that, you know, again, in this little statistical analysis, Notre Dame's run game actually went 5-2-3. Of course, the two losses being Georgia and Michigan. But they held their own.
One you knew was coming, the Georgia. They weren't going to run the ball well. Two, you thought that they would and they could win the game. I thought they could win the game because they would have a tie against Michigan as opposed to an absolute outright knockout loss. You know, let's just realize something. We're in 3 years, we can't say, well, you know, USC has material anymore. That crutch is gone.
It's definitely deteriorating. Although we still said that going into this year's game. But I take it back. I have one more to mention, and the Ian Book critics would say, well, I'm not surprised at that. But Notre Dame's passing game this year: 3 wins, 5 losses, 2 ties. It's based upon the opponent and what their average was for the year. And so, there were times.
Makes more sense, yeah.
Those stats certainly show Ian Book struggling a little bit more than us saying 33 touchdown passes and 6 interceptions, for example.
I guess, and there aren't many wins early in the year for Ian Book in that regard either.
Right.
You think of November, and that's he got 3 of his wins. I bet he got his 3 wins in November without looking. Stanford, Navy, Duke. Fresh on our minds. That's why.
Absolutely. Tim, anything else from Saturday? I was not there. You were there. Anything that you took away from Saturday's press conference?
I thought it was weird that the first two questions were about Javon McKinley and John Jones, but then it became enlightening because Javon McKinley, we assumed his Notre Dame career was over. He is practicing to play. Brian Kelly couched it by saying, look, we're knocking off 6 weeks of rust.
Right.
And I only bring that up right now because I've since then, last night, received word from someone that knows McKinley, that McKinley says he's coming back. Which
we had received word prior to that he definitely was not coming back.
However, there has been a change in the Notre Dame coaching staff since then, which I believe could be relevant to this. I don't know if he's coming back, because remember, we also have had players say guys have been named captain that weren't named captain. Because they don't know the rules about some of these things, and they don't know if they're all wanted back. I would assume they'd want Javon McKinley back because they're so young at wide receiver and unproven. And actually, they're low on numbers because you're bringing in 2, you're losing 3, including Michael Young, and you voluntarily moved to 4th. So you're down 2 from what was smallish this year. You would lose another one to McKinley.
Yes.
It would be good if he comes back.
I'm not sure that he plays an ultra-prominent role, it would certainly be great to have him back.
He plays an ultra-prominent role the week Kevin Austin rolls his ankle. You know, and that's the guy you want in there.
And he's a guy with size, and Keys and Lindsey don't have a great size.
And then the weirdest thing was that John Jones can enter the transfer portal and start on special teams. I just found that interesting, too. I think it's because you weren't going to announce that he was in the transfer portal He was just getting in there to figure out his future.
Right. You have
Notre Dame.
Yeah, you have leeway as the player to be in that portal. That doesn't mean you have left yet, but you're declaring your intentions.
Notre Dame knew he was leaving. John Jones knew he was leaving probably a month and a half ago, and he played hard for Notre Dame then. It's not going to change
anything. He's been a steady performer on special teams for 3 years, right?
And then the awkwardness of it all was when I was doing the incident analysis and walked out and talked about John Jones and Javon McKinley. Was John Jones was standing right there. I said positive stuff about him.
I did want to point one thing out about McKinley and the change of the coordinator and now deciding to come back. We've also heard that Miles Boykin would have come back last year. This year.
Which is different than Javon McKinley. I'm just throwing that out.
Yes. It's quite a bit different. Now, you know, the flip side is that Chip Long deserves a lot of credit for the development of Miles Boykin. Right? So I guess there's two sides to that. But eventually we will turn the page completely on this. But right now it's still a fresh topic, and we still are hearing stories about Ray.
It's a super fresh topic because we don't know how the offense is going to play without – look.
No idea.
I think you said last week, you're taking some points off of your final score for Notre Dame because they lost their offensive coordinator.
You have to.
You absolutely have to. I mean, it doesn't mean we're right, but you have to, logically, going into a game, you have to look at it that they will not.
Especially going against a defensive coordinator that, Brian Kelly said 3-5-3. We've been called a 3-3-5. There are some subtle nuances in there with safety talent and where you align them. But Tom Reese making, we're presuming it's still at this point that Tommy Reese is the guy that's the play caller against John Haycock, who's running a 3-5-3, who has done a really good job. They've done a really good job of stopping the run, and they've done a really good job of limiting teams passing the football. I think it's going to be a real challenge for a first-time play caller.
And we have no reason to believe it would not be Reese in that role for this particular game. It just doesn't. I don't think Lance Taylor's calling plays for the game. Brian Kelly said, "I am not calling plays for the game."
And
I don't think they're going to Jeff Quinn to call plays for the game either.
Jeff Quinn was the offensive coordinator back then. He wasn't calling. Brian Kelly was calling plays.
Yeah, and I have this on Dave Burke, who covered Brian Kelly and Jeff Quinn for 3 years, and there was only two human beings covering that team for 3 years, so he was like involved in sitting around while they're game planning.
Right.
Jeff Quinn helped make the game plan with Brian Kelly, and Brian Kelly called
which
plays.
Which is why I feel I had a question about too many cooks in the kitchen in preparation for this. Jeff Quinn's the only of the three that has been a coordinator. So under the circumstances, we always want this perfect scenario on both scenarios, and they can't be. There's too much change.
Right.
You know, and so sometimes you have to make do. And, of course, you involve Jeff Quinn in the planning stage of this.
If you're a Notre Dame fan that's concerned about how Notre Dame's month has gone because of the loss of Chip Long, just remember that you're a Notre Dame fan that gets to watch guys like Khalid Kareem and Chase Claypool who have absolutely refused to consider sitting out of this game. That is what the plus of the bowl situation is for Notre Dame. Losing an offensive coordinator that 90% of the people listening wanted to lose, you can't be that upset about it in December. Like, this is what happens to every non-playoff team in December. This is when all the change happens. Khalid Kareem, did you hear what he said about playing?
I did.
I thought that was the best comment. If Mike McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson can play in a bowl game,
that says it all, doesn't it?
It sure does.
I mean, and it speaks, I think, speaks a lot to pride in being a Notre Dame football player.
I agree.
And representing this program and having one last opportunity to put the Notre Dame uniform on.
Yeah.
As Notre Dame graduates, we love it.
And if you're a Notre Dame fan listening, they might not win the game. They might be disjointed offense, but they're not going to come out flat because they didn't try.
Right.
That's also what you're looking for this time of year in the Camping World Bowl.
Yep.
Throw that in there.
Segment two, Burning Up the Boards, coming up.
We are back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question from Way to Go K-Man. Who is the most underrated player from Notre Dame's signing class? And we have a couple thoughts on underrated.
Yeah, there's a couple different levels here. I mean, when you consider that Alexander Ahrensberger is the 2,352nd player for 24/7 Sports, I think we can safely say that he is the most underrated player, unless you want to include the long snapper in that.
You should, for your starter.
Yeah. But, I mean, looking at it, we understand Ahrensberger's right there because he's from Germany and a lot of people don't know about him. I think Jay Burnell is the guy that fits it perfectly. 840th composite, 786 on 247 Sports. I've got another one to throw out here who is rated a little bit higher. But we both like Jay Burnell. I mean, I just, if you just look at, if you disregard one of the reasons why, you know, a receiver would be ranked down over others, you know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you.
Jay Brunell is extremely quick and hard off the snap of the football. He puts pressure on his secondary. He wins way more than 50% of the 50-50 balls. He's extremely strong. He's made himself an incredibly strong player. I'm not saying he's going to be a great player, but there is absolutely no reason why that kid can't be a solid. If Chris Fink and many, many, many others before him can be, you know, solid receivers for Notre Dame, he certainly can.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I had him 11th. I think we all had Xavier Watts way higher than he's ranked. I had him at 6 behind Jordan Johnson. I know you had him ahead of Jordan Johnson. So you even had him.
I had him third.
You had him third. So that is your most underrated in terms of the class. Of the four, I like Henderson because of positional versatility. So I have him a solid.
Although 24/7 Sports had him rated 266. He's a composite 640, but the 266, he's a top 300 player.
So that, I guess, if we're going by that, we have him as underrated. But underrated in composite is Henderson, and I have Henderson a full five people between Henderson and the next corner, next defensive back option in Bartleson. So I guess that puts Henderson on my list.
Right. Washington, now that the early signing period is done, which signee has the highest ceiling and which one has the lowest floor? I thought it was an interesting way to ask the question.
I think he means highest floor. We'll do both. But highest floor would be Michael Mayer. He cannot fall that far.
Isn't that what I said?
You said lowest floor because that makes sense.
I said it wrong then.
Yeah, but I think he meant highest floor, which he wrote. And I think Michael Mayer has the highest floor.
I would agree with that. I would throw in a vote for Riley Mills as well. I think that's
cannot not be solid type guy.
Exactly. But I agree with you, Michael Mayer. The highest ceiling.
I'd go with Tyree because of the sheer speed if he's used properly.
Okay, I get that. I would say Tosh Baker because I think that he has all the tools to be a great left tackle. I haven't seen all those tools yet, which is why I rated him down a little bit lower, but I think that if he puts it all together, but I agree with Tyree. I mean, Chris Tyree is a spectacular football player. His vision and his elusiveness, and you know, the kind of guy that he's making that next move while the defender is reacting to the previous one. I've said that before, and that's a sign of a really, really special football player.
For me, Tyree, the only question is don't get nicked up all the time where you can't play to your speed and can't get in the mix, because just get him in the mix.
No, true. If you watch a lot of his high school film, you see him play. He will lower the pads and play physical football, so he's not shying away from anything.
No, and that's the concern. But also the blessing is he's not just an outside guy that's afraid of contact running away from it.
Absolutely not.
But like Braden Lindsey in his redshirt freshman season getting nicks and bumps and having to miss a couple games and getting hit way less than Chris Tyree will if Chris Tyree is involved in the mix.
Right, but Braden Lindsey was less accustomed to taking the hits
for Chris Tyree, too. For sure. 6'18", Grace. Who might be the 19th signee in 2020, high school or from the transfer portal?
I assume that this question is asked based upon, I mean, did Brian Kelly say something?
He kind of hinted that.
Yeah. And I know that Tom Loy, there's a comment on our message board today regarding this. And I think if there was reference made to a 19th, it was probably Josh Monheim from California. Offensive, I think he played tackle in high school, projected as offensive guard. He was the highest verbally committed recruit to USC. He had visited Notre Dame, but then he signed with USC. So if there's somebody beyond that right now, off the top of my head, I don't know who that is. But that was, I think, the initial reference to somebody that might come later in the process.
I also don't want to throw a wet blanket on the on the fun of it, but Henderson hadn't signed yet when he said we might get another one. So every once in a while he does that. Hopefully he wouldn't mean.
You're right. That may have been what his reference was. But I know there was talk out there about possibility of somebody else. And Monheim was a guy that was on the list and had visited Notre Dame, but he went ahead and signed with USC.
Drew Brennan, 77. Where does this Iowa State game rank on the 2019 schedule for a difficulty standpoint? Behind only Michigan, Georgia, and USC?
I liked the question, Drew Brennan, 77. I thought it was interesting to consider, and certainly Iowa State would be behind Michigan, Georgia, and USC. Virginia. I think I would put Virginia ahead of them because they have a dynamic quarterback and they have a good defense too. Their defense was really suffocating most of the year.
When we talked a little to Khalid Kareem about Iowa State, he mentioned Purdy reminds him most of the Virginia quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
And Eichenberg mentioned in terms of where the blitzes are coming from. Now they're not as effective at getting home, but he mentioned, it was kind of like Virginia where you don't know where everything's coming from. So that would be the one from Eichenberg and Khalid Kareem.
I will say Iowa State should have an extremely difficult time getting home with their blitzes on book.
Because Virginia, Bronco Mendenhall, has always been able to confuse. That is his calling card as a coach. He was at BYU. Yeah. But so those, I think Virginia is a good maybe comparison. This is the third lowest point spread, though.
Because
USC was 10.
Yeah.
Which was off.
Right.
But, I mean, as it turns out, was a rough line because USC got so much better. But, yeah, but Georgia was favored by a lot.
Iowa State and Virginia, I mean, those would be at the head of the second group of most difficult opponents that Notre Dame faces.
I'd rather face Iowa State than rematch USC. So that's the best way to say
I'd rather face Iowa State than rematch Virginia as well.
Those rematches are boring, especially against Virginia.
Domer 96, should we expect a few of Kelly's greatest hits for the bowl game? Maybe a few wide receiver slip screens or running back draw plays that we saw on a consistent basis prior to Chip Long's arrival?
I think they're sticking with the offense and its structure. It's a bowl game, so you're going to have some things. So their sixth practice was Saturday. Their seventh practice was Sunday. They're going to have three more. It's a game week now. Remember, we're in game week. So they're having a walkthrough. Today's Monday, right? They're having a walkthrough right now before they leave, as we're recording this podcast, just a walkthrough. That counts as a practice. But then they're just doing three more practices. It's a game week. I think the first four practices, at the very least, had nothing to do with Iowa State.
I mean, you want to run plays that you've been running all year and you're familiar with. Will there? I mean, but I think it's a good suggestion. Could there be one or two aspects of the offense that would be slipped in? Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the wide receiver screens, we used to see a lot more of that, certainly.
I will go with the running back draw play because Eichenberg, just had a long talk with Eichenberg, if you can't tell, right here on Saturday. He mentioned, I asked him the challenges as a lineman of facing drop eight because we only talk about Ian Book facing drop eight.
Right.
He mentioned, not as much for him, he's a tackle, but the guards and center have to make sure it's a drop eight before they go do anything else. In other words, he always is going to have someone coming.
Right.
Or should be coming.
Right. If it's a three-man rush, he's going to be...
he's got to engage.
Right.
He doesn't know if help's coming yet from his guard. But if you don't... So draw plays. If Iowa State is giving away on film that they are dropping early, that's when the draw play works. But Chip Long liked that, too. He ran it against Louisville for... That's the first long run of the year.
And they will... Because they have a heavy personnel level on the second run, they can afford to spy... the quarterback, that's where it's going to be interesting to see what Ian Book's capable of doing. And I guess technically that would also include they could, quote, spy a delay to a running back as well.
Yes. Yeah, that's...
So...
I did like the question, but I wanted to point out that they didn't work. They didn't redo the whole offense because they honestly haven't had that much time to prepare.
That's why when in interviewing Chuck Martin a couple weeks ago, he was... downright giddy that they're playing on January 6th. He said, "You know, most of the teams from the MAC are playing before Christmas, and you get no extra preparation time." And in this instance, as you're saying,
think about that. That's true.
There's really not any extra preparation time for Notre Dame. If you're playing on January 6th in the Lending Tree Bowl against Louisiana, he's got all kind of time. They can get well past the finals and focus on that. Nobody cares that much about Chuck Martin, but just thought I'd throw that in.
Irish boy one, how much will a new play caller affect Irish offensive success or lack thereof?
Could be huge. I mean, it could be absolutely huge against a veteran defensive coordinator, John Haycock, that runs a different type of defense that is going to have, I don't care how much you prepare or how good of a job Tommy Rees does. Ian Book's going to look at some things that are going to confuse him.
I'm actually surprised Brian Kelly isn't calling plays for the bowl game. I think he would have said, I was expecting him to say, I have gotten beyond the point of my career where I'm calling plays. We will hire an offensive coordinator to call plays. But in this quick turnaround situation, I will probably call them for the bowl game.
Maybe you know, I think what would be in everybody's best interest is for that to be an open line of communication and say, Coach Reese, I don't think you want to run that.
Yeah, I mean, or look, run here, Tommy. Look, you know,
yeah,
remember the flat. Remember,
yeah,
all,
yeah. Exactly. You don't want to overdo that. I have no idea how he's going to
handle
that. No,
but I would think he'd be involved in this more than any other ones that people.
He should be.
Yeah. That's how I feel. He should be.
You need to win a football game. You need to go. You need to go into the offseason 11-2, and you need to do whatever you have to do to win, which is why you're saying you thought he might.
I thought he would just call
step
them.
In
yeah,
and call.
Step. Maybe
call
he will, though. Place. Maybe he will.
But if he is. Think of it this way, though. If he has really pretty much already made up his mind that Tom Reese is going to be that guy moving forward, then he'd like him making those decisions against Iowa State in this bowl game, right?
Yeah, because Clemson's coming to town,
right.
Too.
ND 1012, do you feel Coach Kelly's guidance to Quinn, Reese, and Taylor towards the running game changes the blocking scheme and lends to run between the tackles more instead of trying to run wide?
No, I think it's all I hate to misspeak here, but I think it's all involved in game planning, finding a plan that the offensive line coach and offensive coordinators and head coach all agree upon, not having friction in that game plan, not having friction in the preparation for the games. And when he said the untrained eye won't see it, I completely believe him.
Changing a blocking scheme?
Yeah, that's
in this
late.
Short amount of time, I don't see that happening.
That would be five practices.
More stuff between the tackles. I think he kind of hinted at that. Certainly,
he wanted to be physical.
You want to run wide against this defense. Although their linebackers, you know, it's interesting. Phil Steele had them going into the preseason as the best linebacker core in the Big 12, which I thought was interesting. I don't see them as a real quick unit. They're good. I mean, they play downhill really, really well, but you absolutely want to try to do stuff wide against this defense.
And this is probably from Captain Obvious, but four of the six losses under Long were in five of them the offense didn't play well. You have all-star linebacking speed in Miami, Clemson, Georgia, and Georgia.
Yeah, I don't –
that's harder to play against
I think this is a very solid, very well-taught – I think everything about this program – is well taught. I think it's a well taught linebacker core, but that doesn't mean that you can't expose them for what they lack. They're Iowa State recruits at linebacker.
Taking shots at Iowa State versus USC.
I mean, come on.
I guess it's different. CMU Pence fan, what component of the Iowa State offense does Clark Lee have to focus on most in terms of shutting it down?
Well, we know about their passing game's prolific, but you still need to contain Breece Hall, who is slippery. He's not very big. He's actually bigger than he looks, or he plays a little bit bigger than he looks. He will slide through some tackles. But when Iowa State has struggled, their running game has struggled. And so that still needs to be your same point of emphasis, especially since you have so much confidence in your pass rush and the back end of your defense. You let them do what they do against a very good passing game. But you go into the game saying, we're going to stop the run and make them beat us at our strength.
Yeah, they've done a great job when healthy. When Crawford's out there, they tackle well to shut down a lot of yards after catch. I mean, they didn't lose games because teams were hitting it on them.
Right.
And that's, if Notre Dame ties in the passing game, pass defense against Iowa State, they're going to handle them the way I put them in the confidence pool you gave me to fill out. Was I the highest? I know it's a small confidence pool.
I've turned that over to my son, the expert in the field. I've passed that duty on to him.
Yeah, you're beyond that in your coaching career. You're not calling plays with that every day. So I had Notre Dame pretty high, though, in my confidence pool.
What'd you have?
Like 34, 33?
I think there might have been some female participants that had them 40, but just saying.
I had Alabama higher. I guess just roll out, put them in their place.
Kay Beasley asked, does Clark Lee game plan Iowa State similar to USC, drop 8 and allow them to run? Or does he prepare for a more balanced attack?
We briefly touched on this. They, as much as you like the wide receivers, I mean, Tyler Vaughns, Michael Pittman, and Amon-Ra St. Brown are a different
those
breed.
Are, to use Brian Kelly's term, game wreckers.
They would just win the game if you played them straight up like Utah tried to. And now Utah's a bad example because they got lit up by everybody saw it. But, I mean, that's why Utah lost to USC. They just thought, this is how we play. We're going to come play you. Credit Clark Lee for not doing that. I mean, I went on here and said he should have tweaked it too, but they don't have to do that against Iowa State. So if you don't have to, I don't think you do it.
No, I don't. Yeah, you don't want to. I mean, the term play left-handed. You don't want to play left-handed unless you have to. And I don't think you have to. Now, USC's passing game was dominated by three guys. I would say Iowa State uses more receivers, so they go a little bit deeper.
You can't play them all, though.
No, you can't. No, yeah, you can't. You can't play seven receivers at a time. And USC at some point, especially in the second half, they start throwing the ball to the tight end, which they didn't normally do. Iowa State has a really good tight end and a good one behind him. So they go a little bit deeper, but it's not as dangerous as what we were talking about with USC.
In other words, he won't overreact.
The level of athlete that you're playing against, I don't think that you need to react in that fashion.
See Norman 83, what are the biggest position group mismatches for the bowl game against Iowa State?
I don't like Iowa State safeties. I think their safeties are vulnerable. I mentioned, you know, the linebacker speed, although they're good football players and they generally do a pretty good job of keeping it in front of them. But I think you can run wide against them. Offensive line, I really like the way Iowa State's offensive line plays as a unit. They're pretty good pass protectors. So again, as a unit, so I think it'll be interesting to see what Notre Dame's pass rush does against them.
Mine work in Congress with, I think, attacking the safeties, and also I think Notre Dame's pass protection is, as you mentioned earlier, can keep Iowa State at bay. That means Ian Book can have a.
There is no way that Iowa State's pass rush, I don't care what level they're coming from, should have a big day against Notre Dame. Their sack total is like 27, which is three below Notre Dame, but I think the disparity is greater than that. Denver Maximus, how important is this bowl game in the practices for someone like Houston Griffith, a highly regarded recruit, but little or no movement on the depth chart after a few position changes and a few years in the program? Any other players in need of making some noise for next year?
I don't know how much of a I hate to keep bringing this up, but I don't know how much of a chance they got. It would have to be practices 1 through 5, with one of them during finals week that wasn't a full practice. Because with Houston Griffith and the backups are not starting on Saturday, they were Iowa State-centric game planning. It's just a regular game week. None of these guys are getting... Now, they probably got all the time they needed in practices 1 through 4 because you did nothing with the likes of Gilman and Kareem.
That probably wasn't game planning. That was just getting those guys out there and getting them run around and seeing what they could show.
Right. That was just kind of gaining confidence for Griffith in his new spot, getting more reps. I guess he gets intense reps with Terry Joseph at safety that he wouldn't normally be getting because he shut down Gilman and Elliott. But I don't think this was a year for that. I know people aren't going to like that because basically there aren't four practices. They just gave away four, if not six, four practices that will never happen and two walkthroughs, one walkthrough and one light one. So Houston Griffith is at the top of my list of healthy guys that needs to make a jump through the spring, but I think it starts more in off-season training.
I think that line of thinking is a little overrated, especially when you're playing on the 28th, maybe if you're playing the 30th and you have a little bit more time, but... They're so bent on getting the 11th win and trying to get this right with the offensive staff and a little bit of disarray. I just don't think that they've played a lot. They've played as many guys as they're going to play. And an 11th win to them at this point with guys like Claypool and Kareem saying, we're playing, you know, we want to represent Notre Dame. I don't think they're going to do anything to compromise that. And I'm not sure that there's... I'm just not sure that there's enough time for a guy to... I mean, look, even if a guy makes a little bit of a breakthrough this week, he still has to prove it all over again in the spring and in August.
Well, remember the whole thing, we're going to be unleashing a weapon a little bit against Clemson, and we surmised it was Lawrence Keys, and did he get a snap?
Yeah.
I mean, there's...
Right.
It's just not...
It's very difficult to project those things unless you get some real significant intel that says, we are definitely doing this.
But bringing up Houston Griffith, that's the guy we'll be talking about, I think, a lot. Good or bad in the spring, and I hope really highly of. I want to hear from back channels that Houston Griffith had a great winter conditioning.
Right.
That sometimes that leads into.
Right. Jim_Booney_CRS, excluding the offensive coordinator, who else do you expect to be replaced on the current coaching staff?
We've been assuming that Todd Light would move to be with his family.
Yeah. We don't have cornerback coaching prospects to replace him yet. We're not positive that that's actually going to happen. I think that it can.
He popped up in some recruiting visit photos too.
Right. And I wouldn't.
Which we hadn't heard earlier. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't make sense. He wasn't part of the recruiting process of the other guys. So I think people are doubling down on this, where it's more of a logical thing.
Because of family.
And not a great recruiting effort. Although Brian Pullian refutes that it's not a good recruiting effort because of how much they drilled down on these guys. That's in Monday Musings, by the way.
That was, but that was, as you know, still forced. That was out of necessity that they drilled down on a bunch of three-star guys.
We do not expect, won't speak for you, but I in no way expect Jeff Quinn to not be on the staff next year.
All right, well, let's go to the next question since it's from Looking for Friends, and it's, are Tommy Rees and Lance Taylor the only two internal candidates for the vacant OC role? Or would Kelly reverse course and revert back to another old assistant, meaning Jeff Quinn?
I mean, I could see Jeff Quinn being involved in game planning, but he's not going to be involved in play calling if that's what worries people.
I agree with what you're saying. He's not going to be the offensive coordinator. I don't think he's in a consideration for that. It's Rees and Taylor, with Rees having the advantage.
Here's what I think. No matter who they hire, Quinn, Rees, Taylor are outside. Everyone listening is going to hate that guy at least twice next year.
At least twice.
Yeah, because they can win the game and still hate the offensive coordinator. So if it's Quinn, you're going to really hate him because you already do. And if it's Rees, you're going to hate him because he used to throw interceptions as a senior. And you like Taylor more because you don't know anything about him. But then once they don't run the ball against Michigan, you're going to be, what's wrong with our running game? How come our offensive coordinator stinks? And if you bring in the new guy, they're going to want Rees.
Right. Maybe Lance Taylor should just focus on his running backs.
Yes, exactly. So you're not going to like him in early November when Brent Venables is coordinating against him. That's just
now,
what I'm thinking.
We both agree that, you answer, and I won't answer for you, but I mean, he should give a long look outside the program and give serious consideration to the best. There are a lot of real quality offensive coordinators out there that would crawl to Notre Dame.
I wrote in my column last week, the most important thing he does for this offensive coordinator thing is search outside the program. I'm not saying that you have to do it. You have to not hire Rees. But you have to search like you did when you brought in Mike Samford and said, we needed someone to turn the room upside down. You brought in Chip Long and you were like, he sees the game through my eyes. I want someone to be similar to Long in that two tight end focus, the running game centric thing, and then just do better against better teams. But what are the complaints against Long? Is that Georgia, Miami, Clemson, Michigan. Those are the five complaints, because the Stanford game had nothing to do with Long for the leather loss. But Chip Long brought back the two tight end offense and brought back more running. And he modernized it with the RPOs that they don't seem to run like as well as the other teams do. But don't you want that still? Chip Long?
I do, and I think that's what Notre Dame needs and should have. I thought it was interesting Saturday that Brian Kelly talked about, we want to be better in the run game.
Okay, great, coach. We want you to be better for like 7 years in the run game.
But I mean, this is what I meant by that. Does that mean that he will continue to try to emphasize the game to the level that Chip Long did? I still find that hard to believe that he will.
I just want the coordinator that will do that.
That's not his DNA.
No. Well, now I want Lance Taylor, so to give the ball to his players. No, I just want a coordinator that will emphasize the running game at Notre Dame. And especially if Cole Kmet's there, the two tight end package is the staple of next season's offense.
It should be.
They scored 10 touchdowns this year, the tight ends. It's a program record. The offensive coordinator you all hate put a program record for tight ends out there, the position everyone loves.
And a Brian Kelly record for scoring in a single season. And look, they've always played, there's always a tomato can or two there. New Mexico and Bowling Green. You hammered them. So those count too, and they counted in previous years, and it was the highest scoring offense in the 10 years of Brian Kelly.
Psycho 3848, do you think Komet's decision to stay or go would be in part driven by the disparity in income between Samardzija and Rudolph, that is $102 million to $40 million for Kyle Rudolph?
I think that Cole Komet's a smart guy, and I think he would take that into consideration. I also think, and I know in the case of Jeff Samardzija, who was a spectacular receiver and would have been a fine NFL receiver as well, but he was looking for quality of life as well, knowing full well that, the quality of life of a baseball player, even though you're playing 162 games, and that's rough in its own way.
In a different way.
I mean, yeah, like in travel and being away, being away more than you would for football. Certainly. Now, is Cole Kmet as strong of a baseball prospect as Jeff Samardzija? I don't think so.
He's closer to Kyle Rudolph as a prospect than he is Jeff Samardzija, for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean certainly positionally. Yeah. So, I mean, I think all those things come into play. There's more money to be made in baseball, but you have to be really, really good. And Jeff Samardzija, who hasn't been a great Major League Baseball pitcher, is still pitching.
He made the right choice.
Well, he did. And he's, and we don't know that Komet is a starting pitcher on the next level, whereas Samardzija became one and, as I said, still is.
My big takeaway from that is I just hope Cole Komet stays. There we go. If you want, just somebody show him that. Someone send him these figures.
Well, and I do think
say that to him on Christmas. $102 million. Call baseball. Try it out. Stay here another year. Just see if he does it.
Well, he could. I mean, he could play baseball in the spring and then get drafted and then still leave before the fall.
I don't want that.
I don't want. No, we don't want that either. Michael Martin, 78. Would you hire Martin Ingles? We're mixing a basketball question.
Yeah, but this is what people want to hear. Yeah. So.
Would you hire Martin Inglesby as Notre Dame's next basketball coach? Would you offer him the job in March of 2020?
No to the latter. Inglesby, yeah, this is it's an interesting development because do you want it? It'll kind of keep the system in place of what Notre Dame really needs to operate under. Mike Bray's system is successful offensively until they run into much better players. But would you would hope, in theory, offer a recruiting bump in terms of young effort and knowing that the reason Mike Bray went to a couple Elite Eights is because he had all his best players that he's ever had on that team.
Well, first, Martin Inglesby is not the kind of guy that is overly demonstrative, that if you look at him on the sideline, you're going to say, wow, that's a guy that's really going to inspire this program to go to greater heights. He is the son of a basketball coach, and I think he's an extremely quality basketball mind. For the record, at Delaware, he's been 13-20, 14-19, 17-16, and right now he is 10-3.
And the latter is why you get the question.
They lost to Villanova by 8 recently. They lost to George Washington by 10. They're 10-3, but they've lost 3 of their last 4. They lost to Long Island University recently, so they're struggling a little bit. But in conference play, which is the CAA, they've gone from 5-13 to 6-12 to 8-10, and they haven't started their conference play yet this season.
Like the offensive coordinator, I would have a national coaching search when Mike Bray is no longer
absolutely.
Coach.
Absolutely. There's no reason why you shouldn't consider Martin Inglesby,
right,
as long as you're open-minded about the other very good to great established coaches at a ton of mid-majors that, again, would love to come to Notre Dame.
Bob for ND3. Chance that Ian Book returns for a 5th. Chance that an OL change is coming. Any chance Bo Bauer sees more field time next year as an every down linebacker?
Okay, putting a percentage on Ian Book's return, I would say
90.
I was going to say 80.
Okay.
Somewhere up there very high.
It's close to the Mayo, nowhere else to go type thing. And he's not grad transferring now. That knocks out the grad transfer aspect of things. Why in the world would he grad transfer now?
There's
so
no
that's
reason.
Gone.
That, right.
That limited percentage is now gone.
Chance of an O-line change coming, meaning I assume the O-line coach, I would put a maximum of 20% on it.
I think it's more likely Book leaves than there's an O-line change now. I think the O-line change has happened. The offensive coordinator, that's the change.
Yeah, I said maximum of 20, maximum, so yeah. I would choose something lower than that.
I think there's a better chance of Book going pro than changing the O-line coach now. Otherwise, I don't think they would have pulled the trigger on Long completely that fast.
True. And then the third question, Bo Bauer seeing more time as the, quote, every down linebacker. The problem with that is that Drew White's a Mike linebacker. I'm sure they don't want him to play Buck.
Right, that's the problem.
And they don't want Bo Bauer to play Buck. So there is the problem. White's not going to get unseated.
More time, though, is different now that I think about it. I mean, he could give him a couple series, a series of the first, series
no,
of the second.
No, it would be great. And when you watch him play special teams, right, and you certainly think, you got to love the kid's savvy. He's incredible.
He can clearly play football. I talked to Bo Bauer Stanford week. Wrote a story about it. It was special teams focused, but we did talk to him about struggles trying to take the next step. He's very diplomatic about it. He goes, look, we all had our chance in the spring. I ended up having some really good players in front of me that did a great job all year. He met Bilal and White. I'm sure they had to cross-train everybody.
Yeah.
They were doing everything. They were just throwing stuff at the wall in early spring. He's just not as good as Drew White, I don't think, at middle linebacker. And Drew White had a heck of a year. Like, he was a top 10 Notre Dame player this year, Drew White.
He was in our
list.
Both
had him on our list as top 10. I don't think anybody's going to have him below 12.
Interesting that the only player that people really argued in our top 50, well, it ended up being number three, was Ian Book. Right? Did anybody else, like, vehemently argue anybody other than Ian Book?
I don't think so. They didn't like, someone didn't like Aquara on the top 20, but he was, if you break it down, he was still top 20, actually. We all like Bo Bauer. I think what would be great for Bauer and White is if those series come into play. You know how they happened in Louisville and New Mexico? If it happens all year. You can take some of the load off Drew White, and Bo Bauer brings a spark. I should go back. Bo Bauer was saying struggling with pass coverage is the number one problem. He was totally open about it. I'll get that on the message board so people can actually see the quote, what he said about learning pass coverage and everything like that. But so what everybody kind of guessed is indeed the thing that's been holding him back from scrimmage.
Right. Judge Arthur Vandalay, if Ian Book, Cole Kmet, and Alohi Gilman all decide to return to Notre Dame in 2020, how realistic is it to expect Notre Dame to make a serious run to playoffs in 2020?
I expect Book back and Gilman not. And I think that Gilman is a 10% to come back for me, right? He's just basically announced, I want to go off my life.
Yeah,
he's
going
to get the return to school grade, though.
I asked him if he was ready. Do you feel you're ready for the NFL? And he spoke honestly, which meant that he tipped his hand. I absolutely think I'm ready for the NFL.
Yeah.
So why would he come back?
I do not believe he'll be back. But Book and Kmet, I think it allows Notre Dame to make a serious run at the playoffs.
Well, if you can beat Wisconsin, Clemson, and USC.
Well, you make the run if you beat Wisconsin, because Clemson and USC come at the end, and you
right.
rank number
okay,
three.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
I do think that the middle pack teams that they're going to face are going to be more difficult than this past year, because Wake Forest is a handful offensively. Stanford will be better. You have to travel to Pittsburgh. Duke is Duke. I know Notre Dame hammered them. You know how I feel about David Cutcliffe. And Louisville definitely will be trending up with Scott Satterfield.
Yeah, there's also an extra. There's more road thrown in. There's more travel thrown in. There's more chance of a stub toe that wasn't materializing this year. Virginia Tech was the only close one.
But the whole idea, if you have Book and Kmet coming back.
Because we really like
with
Kevin
everything,
Austin from what we've heard, too.
Yeah, with Kevin Austin, we think he's going to step forward with Lindsey's development, with a lot of guys, with Ovi Agufo and what he's shown a little bit. I mean, you can go across the
Crawford's
board.
Helping out with coming
Absolutely.
Back at corner, likely. Yeah.
Is Notre Dame in a position to make a serious run at the playoffs? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the key, is that can you be number two or three when you play Clemson? Can you be number two or five when you play Clemson? And can you have a great game against Clemson, beat them, or lose a game by 1 point? And then you're 11-1, your losses to Clemson? That's the ultimate test of can Notre Dame get in with a loss. Because if you are in the top five and you play Clemson to the absolute wire, obviously if you win, you're going to be number one. So let's say you lose, and then you go beat number 15 USC.
Yeah, the notion that Notre Dame has to go undefeated in order to make the playoffs. I mean, it's just that in certain years, yes, that's true. But that's the case for everybody.
Not if you have Clemson on your schedule.
Right.
What if it's 37-0 Clemson?
Right.
And you take it to the final gun, and that's
right.
your only loss.
I mean,
I keep saying final loss, only
just,
loss, because if they win, they're
going to Right, but you just can't put a number on it. There's so many variables involved, and we see it every year, that it depends.
Final question from Vito Spada 4ND, timely, considering the bowl, which was the Gator Bowl. Are you a trailer or tent kind of guy?
Do you camp? Do you guys camp?
Not much. No.
Okay. We're campers, but not enough to buy a trailer.
Well, they don't cost the same as a tent, though, either. Right?
No, that's what I'm saying. Okay, that's what I'm saying. No, I love camping.
Oh, that could be the question.
I love camping. We're all in the tent. I have all the we have everything that goes with it, everything that you need. But I need electricity, and I need a shower and a bathroom, because I'm not roughing it that badly.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of sleeping in that condition. So the last time I was in an RV, we rented one for Nebraska 2001. There were 10 of us of my age sleeping in an RV in the tailgate lot in Lincoln. Not the most comfortable situation I've ever been in my entire life.
No.
I was sleeping above the spot above the driver's area where they have the little roof thing up there.
So you gotta have the blow up mattress.
We
need
it. Yeah, there was a lot going on, man. And then the tailgate, of course, we got in at 4 a.m. from a night out, and then all the tailgate lots, people start coming in at 6 a.m. Well, that's also not awesome. I should throw in, just because of this, Liam Eikenberg was asked if he camps.
Yeah.
Which was an annoying train of questions going through. But he had a funny answer. He said that, yes, he does. Trevor Ruland would be the best camper. I just took that to mean because of the mountain man look. And then Colin Grunhard would be the worst because he has short arms and couldn't forage for things. I assume this is a great shot at his friends.
It sounds like Eichenberg was, when he heard the Camping World Bowl, he just couldn't wait to say that.
So best answer of Saturday.
Yeah, and I a thumbs up on the tent camping here for myself. All right, we're gonna end with that. And our plan is to have a podcast from Orlando on Thursday or Friday,
and hopefully not twice because that means something happened.
We just wanted to preview the game. Normally we do it 2 days before kickoff, but it could come on Friday. We're just going to see how that works out. There's some logistics that we never are quite sure how it all works out.
I might be on a bus from Tulsa again.
Let's hope not. For your sake, I'm hoping. Thanks for joining us. Everybody, please have a safe and Merry Christmas. We appreciate you being a subscriber and or listening to Irish Illustrated Insider. God bless.
Indiana Dunes Tourism, located between Chicago and South Bend in Northwest Indiana, is a proud supporter of Irish Illustrated. Extend your Notre Dame visit with a trip to the nation's newest national park. Visit IndianaDunes.com.